What's up, guys? Welcome to the Establish the Edge podcast. I'm your host, Pat Corain, and with me is my co-host, Mike Leone of EstablishTheRun.com. Mike, how's it going?
It's going well. We were talking before the show, but got to give you congratulations for your awesome GPP win in the Engage 8 on DraftKings last week. Just a super smart lineup with the Watson double stack that I was kicking myself for not making because the math just looked so smart on it. You know, whenever you get three guys from the same team that are the obvious stack and all three of them project pretty well without a lot of ownership, it just, you know, kind of in hindsight, I'm kicking myself for not doing that. It would have given me an excuse for the Henry run back. And then you correlated Jefferson and Julio Jones, just a really smart lineup. So glad that paid off for you.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I mean, you had the Watson double stack, the triple stack the week before. So that kind of got my wheels turned on that. I knew that would be kind of viable and the ownership was way down. So I figured what the heck. And yeah, hanging out with you and Pete Overzet and all these crushers, I knew I had to get on the board here. So it was nice to get a win. This week we have a really cool show. Mike sent a tweet out and asked for suggestions on what topics we should cover. We got some really interesting stuff. So this is kind of a listener question episode, but we have organized it a little bit into some topics. So we're going to get into some dynasty polarizing players. And just at this point of the year, dynasty can be pretty tough because your team might be in a completely different place than some other teams. And it can be really tough to try to evaluate like what is signal from the season and what is just stuff that we're going to have completely forgotten about by the time we're doing startups next year. But that also opens up opportunities. You know, if people are looking at things completely differently than you, it can really make the trade market pretty interesting. So going to get into some specific players who I think are particularly polarizing. Also talk a little bit in honor of J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who had a breakout game this week with a fumble recovery. That's all it takes. Going to cover like him a little bit and how to avoid the next guy. And, you know, he was a second round pick. So there are, you know, we have some candidates for who could be the next J-Jaw, which includes some highly drafted guys. And then get into some of these running backs that are being used a little weird, how to evaluate these running backs at this time of year, which can be especially tough, particularly for guys who don't have a long track record. And then get into a rapid fire discussion with just a couple topics that are more kind of philosophical topics like roster construction, that type of stuff. So that's the rundown of what we're doing here. And let's, Mike, I'll kick it over to you here to get us started. What do we do with Juju Smith-Schuster? That's you had some real sharp thoughts on this pre-show.
Yeah, pre-show, you said you were hoping to get my thoughts on this, and I instantly knew you were set up for disappointment. I gave you the I don't know shoulder shrug, and I wanted to theme this show Dynasty is Hard because I think. I've been talking with Drew Dinkmeyer a lot lately because we're both somewhat new to Dynasty. You know, I'm about 3 years in. He's about a year to 2 years in on most of his rosters. And you just really see how quickly things can change and how you can, your teams that look so good and they look so robust and they're really not robust. And to take Juju, I'll get back to Juju specifically in a second. I know I'm going a little bit of a tangent here, but I think players like Juju exemplify the roster I have the most difficult time with, which is a disappointing young roster. And what do I do with that? Because I can't sell off the young players that I hope do well. And you just get in a weird spot where you feel a little bit frozen. You just have to hope the players start playing better, which is in a way where I'm at with Juju Smith-Schuster, who it's not like he's not on the field, you know, Ben Gretsch had a tweet from Rich Hribar and his Stealing Signals that showed that, and you put in our show notes, Juju's running routes on 96% of dropbacks. That's fourth in the entire NFL. It's not like he's not out there. It's not like he's not getting opportunity, but his targets per route run is really low. And not only that, even when he is getting targeted, it's disgusting. You know, his yak's bad. His ADOT's bad. It's not good. So it's difficult to know, what do you do with Juju Smith-Schuster? And when you see this type of thing happening with an older player, you can sort of just get what you can and get out from the player, you know, and move on and salvage some value before it goes down to zero. With Juju Smith-Schuster, a young player who also, you know, in the back of my mind, you've got this potential out of, he's probably not going to be with Pittsburgh. Is it a Pittsburgh thing, you know, or is it a Juju thing? Seems like it's a Juju thing, though, because all these other receivers are having success here. So that was my long-winded way of saying, I don't know. It's quite the conundrum.
It is a conundrum, and I would argue in some ways Juju isn't a young player. He is literally a young person, but he is going to be a free agent after the year. And a lot of what we get with young players comes down to price protection. And once a player's changing teams, having sort of washed out of Pittsburgh over the last 2 years, you know, if this continues, he'll basically have, and then he's not re-signed. He's not going to get some massive contract elsewhere. He's going to get, you know, maybe he gets like a 2-year deal. He might end up on a franchise that's not all that great. So you can start to see how things could get even worse from here. And you don't have the trade value price protection that you have with a guy who's, you know, in his second year or in his third year, and he's going to still remain on the team and get a chance to bounce back. Basically like what we got with Juju last year. Juju last year had a really down year and his price didn't change all that much. That was partly because he was returning to Pittsburgh. He had had a second year breakout. He only had one down season. People were keeping the faith pretty much universally. Well, that actually did provide a bit of a sell window on Juju that now is you're starting to see evaporating a bit. I still think that if you do want to get out on Juju, you can. You don't have to just completely sell him for scraps. I mean, I think you could I do a show called Stat Chasing, where I do like a weekly rundown of all the relevant stats from that week on YouTube. And someone had asked if they should get a mid-first, you know, if they could get a mid-first for Juju, would you do that? That feels
mid-first.
Yeah. On some level, it feels light, but on another level, it kind of feels like you're not going to hate yourself for, you know, next year when you're drafting the mid-first round that you traded away Juju. I think I'd probably take the mid-first at this point. I think another thing you could do is like try to go get a guy like Sutton, you know, especially if the guy with Sutton is competing this year. See if you can get him. Maybe you can even get like him in a third. You know, you could actually get a little juice on top of Sutton potentially. Or if you could get a guy like Rager, who, you know, is obviously disappointed so far with the injuries. Rager, I thought, was an awesome value in the mid to late first. And you could even get like Rager. Maybe you could get like Rager in a second if someone's kind of worried. I would probably take Rager straight up at this point, but I think I definitely would take Rager straight up at this point. Where are you at on that?
Yeah, I would take Rager straight up at this point. And I think those are really sharp trade ideas where the kind of, as you said, he's literally still a young player. So if that's in someone's head that they're not giving up a ton of long-term value while maybe they need short-term value to compete, that's probably the best you're going to do is attacking that type of deal. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad to hear you say that because I was kind of flush out on it. I was kind of, you know, like throwing my hands up and just kind of, I hope he does better. But I do think if you're an active trader, that those are some really good ideas. And going back to Dynasty is hard. You know, even when did you last do your Dynasty rankings update, Pat?
It's been a few weeks. I need to get another one up. If I get
the last update was end of September,
this week or next week. Yeah.
About a month into the season. And, you know, at that point, we were kind of like, all right, everybody, chill out. It's okay. And it feels like this last week with Deontay out was kind of the backbreaker. Mm-hmm. I will say that, and I was talking with Drew Dinkmeyer about this as we were working on our DFS projections for this week, and I still have Juju with, like, you know, just a hair more target share than Chase Claypool. And he was pointing out Juju snaps fell off. You know, this is, but when I see that percentage of routes run stat, it makes me think, okay, they won 38-7. Juju's still the primary slot guy. I don't think, you know, he's not going to play when they're running out the clock in an extreme right. blowout. You know, he's not playing in the non-passing situation. So I do think there's hope that, you know, he doesn't get totally replaced because they want him in the slot while Claypool and Deontay and James Washington compete outside. Now, Claypool has played some slot snaps. Deontay has played some slot snaps. So it's not like those are non-existent, but Juju's held pretty firm around 80% of his snaps coming in the slot and being the primary slot guy there.
Yeah, he's running all the routes. So I don't think, like, if you want to just be stubborn and hold on to Juju, and I have Juju in a couple leagues, I turned down a trade where I would have sent Juju for David Montgomery, which there's like some real, that could end up blowing up my face, even though everyone I told about that trade was disgusted by the idea of potentially trading away Juju for David Montgomery. But, you know, Tariq Cohen's a free agent after the season, so David Montgomery workhorse could be a thing that sticks through 2021. It could also be where they just replace him. But anyway, I am being stubborn in some leagues with Juju, and I think the way that works out is because Juju is running all the routes and there's not like a slot wide receiver nipping at his heels. Claypool looks like kind of a classic big outside wide receiver. James Washington plays on the outside. Deontay Johnson plays on the outside. I guess if Juju remains this bad, maybe he gets replaced by Johnson or Washington more in the slot. But right now we're not seeing any signs of that. I do wonder if Juju might be hurt or kind of nursing something, because his numbers are so much worse than what we've seen in the past. He's also, his ADOT has dropped considerably. So in 2018, his ADOT was 8.9. In 2019, his ADOT was 9.5. Josh Hermsmeyer's talked a lot about how, you know, the ADOT kind of belongs with the player. His ADOT this year is down to 4.7. And so, you know, you're seeing, like, with Evan Ingram, right, where his ADOT's just dropped off, and we're chalking that up to Jason Garrett just being a total donkey. I think this might be due to Juju not being able to win downfield right now. Maybe he's a little gimpy. That, of course, runs counter to the fact that he's out there running all the routes. So, but it's not like his talent would have fallen off. I mean, the guy's like 23 years old. So I wonder if it's maybe an injury issue.
The Ben Gretsch comparison in stealing signals was Hakeem Nicks.
Yeah, but Hakeem Nicks had compartment syndrome, and he had numerous foot injuries. He had a broken foot. I mean, I think it's an interesting comparison because Hakeem Nicks, even with those injuries, is one of the most perplexing kind of falls from grace that we've seen at the wide receiver position. And so it's important to remember that type of stuff does happen sometimes, where you have this guy who looks like the next young elite star, and then he ends up being a total bust. So the wide receiver position is a bit safer in Dynasty than running back, but it's not completely insulated. We could see Juju turn to dust the way Nicks did. So I think it's an interesting point, but we're not dealing with, unless, I guess I'm kind of trying to figure that out. Like, are we dealing with a guy who's working through some kind of injuries? I mean, last year he was inefficient because, you know, primarily because of the quarterback play.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you start applying, you know, too much hindsight than you probably should, but it's, you know, did we give him too much of a pass last year because of the quarterback play and because they're not healthy? Because I gave him basically 100% pass, and I did see some people that said, okay, let's give him more, but, you know, a 90% pass and use it as a tiebreaker. And I mean, I was joining leagues in the off season just to draft Juju where he was going. he was a core part of my draft plan. So I don't know, but I think that's enough on Juju. I think listening to you, in my mind, it opens up some cell ideas where I would probably try to see if I can explore the younger player that's not providing value to someone else. You know, the Sutton Rager type ideas, to see if I can get that. And if I can't, I'm probably also not making a juju for David Montgomery. I think that's a little too short-term minded. Unless you're really, you know, going for it this year, I probably wouldn't make that type of move. We have another receiver in DJ Moore that, you know, it's not the juju situation to that extent, because we had an awesome year from DJ Moore last year. And it's not like he's been bad this year. You know, he's kind of run kind of bad. What we've seen, though, that I think is distorting people's perspective on DJ Moore, one, he's been used differently. His ADOT's a lot higher. And with that, you know, doesn't necessarily come less fantasy value, but comes more variant fantasy value. And right next to him, we've seen Robbie Anderson used more like DJ Moore was last year, and he's kind of crushing in that role. And I think both those things together are skewing people's perspective a little bit.
Yeah, and people on Twitter were kind of saying, like, what do we do with Juju and DJ Moore, as if they're kind of in the same situation. I think these guys are in very different situations. With Juju, we're sort of just left with this player that we liked and trying to figure out what's happening, because it doesn't look good in any way. With DJ Moore, we're looking at a guy who's, I believe, wide receiver 11 in Whopper on the season. That's Josh Hermsmeyer's stat that looks at target share and air yard share. He is right behind Robbie Anderson, who's 10th in the NFL. So these two are neck and neck in their in getting a huge portion of their offense. What's happening in Carolina is that there are essentially three players of note. There's Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, and the running back. And there's no tight end that we need to worry about here. Ian Thomas is just a complete afterthought. There's no wide receiver Curtis Samuel wasn't active this past week. So the volume here is extremely condensed to these two wide receivers. The air yard volume is basically split between two guys in this offense. And what I think is also interesting is that DJ Moore did have the role last week that we expect of DJ Moore, and Robbie Anderson was in the role that we expect of Robbie Anderson. Over the first part of the season, they had kind of flipped, where DJ Moore was operating more as a deep threat and Robbie Anderson was operating more in that kind of primary wide receiver depth. But this week, you had Robbie Anderson up at an ADOT of 16 and DJ Moore at an ADOT of 10.8. So they actually kind of flipped roles a bit. And then you had DJ Moore getting the 11 targets. You had DJ Moore with 41% of targets, still 46% of air yards. His Whopper was at 0.93 this week compared to Anderson's at 0.49. So this week, DJ Moore really did operate clearly ahead of Anderson. And they're basically tied on the season. Moore didn't take full advantage of that additional opportunity. He wasn't bad. He had a 2.45 yards per out run, which is good. But, you know, it could have been a huge day instead of just 5 for 93. The thing with Moore is that he's got a 2.23 yards per route run on the season. That's good. That's like an elite yards per route run. This is a player who's been very good over the course of his career. He's getting elite volume and he's putting up elite efficiency. He happens to play with a guy who's getting slightly better volume and has a 2.79 yards per out run, which is obviously better. So he's playing next to a guy who's also playing elite, also getting elite volume. That's providing cover for DJ Moore's trade value, I think. DJ Moore, to me, is just an absolute screaming buy. And I don't think he's really in the same category as a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's not in the same category. In addition to the things you mentioned, you know, DJ Moore is also coming off an age 22 season that has incredible historical comps. You know, he's not like Juju's coming off a season that we wrote off, like we just mentioned, where he was hurt, had bad quarterback play. You know, we made some excuses for him, but it still wasn't a good season. And DJ Moore is coming off a historically good season, age adjusted. So I was trying to think, you know, what would I trade for DJ Moore? And I wonder if you could trade someone like, I mean, Amari Cooper's value maybe takes a hit with the Dalton thing, but I was wondering if you could trade like Amari Cooper to get DJ Moore plus something.
I would love that.
Yeah, I think the market probably values Cooper higher than Moore right now. So I think you could get something like that. I'm trying to think of something, you know, along those lines that would make a lot of sense. I'm just not sure if the, you know, our minds get screwed up by short-term things and Dalton being so terrible last week, which good call, by the way, on you on saying to sell Dalton before he played it down.
Because Yeah, that's true. You know, anytime I can get a little profit on Dalton, I'm going to take it. Yeah, I think that would be a really good trade. I also, you know, like maybe do a little heat check on a guy like Chase Claypool and see if you can add a little bit to him and get more, you know, or take a guy like Justin Jefferson and see maybe if you can just get more straight up for him. I think that's like, certainly, Jefferson looks like a stud. So there's not like, you know, if you're trading away Justin Jefferson, that could end up being bad. But DJ Moore is, you know, playing elite. He's getting elite volume, and we have a longer track record. And I think this will be a better offense to have a wide receiver in than Minnesota's. So, you know, but the fact that I'm even justifying it when Justin Jefferson was like, you know, people weren't even that excited to take him in the late first.
Yeah.
A couple months ago. It's pretty wild. So,
yeah. I do have one other guy that's not a receiver, but I think he's in this vein for me where he's just a younger player that I'm a little frustrated with. And it's TJ Hockenson. And his efficiency is actually, you know, not bad. His yards per target's way up, which makes sense with Stafford. His catch rate's gone from, you know, 54% last year to 68% this year. His yards per reception's about the same. So he's just converting more of those opportunities and being similarly explosive. ADOT's a little bit down, but roughly the same, which, you know, explains some of the increase in catch rate. But, you know, with tight ends, I almost wonder if you sell the hype because we see so few tight ends end up becoming difference makers. And if he hasn't, you know, showcased being a difference maker yet, should I sell the fact that he's still got a lot of hype to him in dynasty before, you know, he, because a tight end, let's say he gets into year three and it's still a similar situation, the value proposition is going to, you know, fall off a decent bit. But I know you're really into Hockenson, so I wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Hockenson right now, I think, is profiling like a guy that I'll probably be pretty hyped on for high stakes next year. You know, in the FFPC tight end premium format, like he's looking like a guy that profiles like a target in drafts next year. Since Kenny Golladay came back, his targets per route runs up to 20.5%. He, you know, will just be entering his third season next year. His yards per target isn't great this year, but I'm not that concerned about it. It's not like they're going to give up on and start phasing out this guy who they took eighth overall a couple years ago. The yards per target is more of a sign of we're just trying to figure out if these guys can gain or lose playing time. I don't think that's really all that concerning with Hockenson. I think we're pretty confident that he's actually good at football. So the bigger thing is, can he earn targets? And with Golladay in the lineup, who I think is really the key to the Detroit passing attack, he started to earn targets at a better rate, and he looked like a big target entering the season. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea to consider selling Hockenson if you start to worry that, you know, his value could be about to fall off a cliff. But right now it seems like I would be on the other side of a guy where you're like, hey, maybe I should get something for this guy before the value falls off. I'm the buyer on that, where I'm going, I think this dude is about to bounce back this season and set up like a guy who's going to be trendy entering next season. So I'm still pretty bullish on Hockenson.
And sometimes from my perspective, it can be difficult because I have these guys that I do their DFS projections and every week. And I'm like, why is Hockenson projecting so low? And then I double check it. And I'm like, no, this is right. And it probably wears on my psyche a little bit more than if you're able to take more of a backseat and understand that you have to be a little bit patient.
Yeah, one thing I've been trying to do right now this time of year is like just try to think about like where this player will be selected in redraft leagues next year. And like I don't think Hockenson will probably be selected roughly where he was this season, I think. Like in FFPC leagues. You know, he's not going to fall down, I don't think, into like where Chris Herndon was going in that like 11th round range. I think he'll still be roughly where he was. And as a player who's showing pretty interesting signs in the targets per route run, with the high draft capital, with the really strong receiving profile in college, I'm just trying to stay strong on him.
So our next section is avoiding the next J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. As Pat mentioned, huge fumble recovery for a touchdown.
Absolutely huge.
And that was Eric Beimfor of Roto Grinders and Add More Funds tweeted that that was his second highest scoring output ever. And I think his first output was like a one catch for a touchdown game. And this is someone I was really high on. And it's just hard to imagine someone flopping more with the opportunity that presented itself, because the wide receiver corps for the Eagles has been littered with injuries both this year and last year. So he's had chances to get on the field, to see targets while he's on the field. There's been times where he's gotten on the field and run wind sprints for 60 minutes. There's been times where he's can't get ahead of the field. And then you see Travis Fulgham have some success, John Hightower even a little bit. And you know, what happened, Pat?
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in mind is that he was a fake underclassman. Anthony Miko's done some work on this where it's like a lot of the signal that we look in that we see with whether a guy declared early or not is really comes down to whether a guy spent 3 years in college or four. And so you don't want guys who are redshirt juniors. If they're redshirting, you want them to come out as sophomores like we saw with KJ Hamler this year. So J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was a little bit weaker of a prospect than it might have looked like. And then we see in this rookie year, he's just getting an absurd amount of routes and not getting the targets. So, yeah, just running wind sprints. And I think at this point, like, he was not someone – I think I drafted him extremely late in a startup where he was just like, you know, you're just literally taking a dart throw, and it's like, well, he's probably going to get a chance to run some more wind sprints this year at least. But for the most part, I mean, I was completely out. I think when you see a guy who's not a very strong prospect have the rookie year where he was able to get on the field, in part not because he had earned it, but really because last year they were just hit with a huge rash of injuries as well. And so they had no choice but to play this guy, and then he could not get targets. That's a huge, huge red flag. And you can see, you know, Dante Pettis is another example of a guy who just immediately turns to dust. So you do see some of these guys that just come into the league, bust super hard, and go away. And I think that's where we're at with J-Jaw. What we want to do at this point is you're not getting anything for him in trades. He's a drop. So we want to avoid the next guy who's going to do this. He was a second round pick, so we have to be – you know, we can't just say like, oh, is it John Hightower or something? You know, we need to be conscious of the fact that J-Jaw was somewhat expensive to get. He was kind of a late second round rookie pick. He was a real life NFL second round pick. So we generally going to be looking at guys who have some draft capital attached to them. The names that I put together were Brandon Ayuk, Jalen Reagor, both first-round picks, Antonio Gandy-Golden, who's having trouble getting on the field, and Gabriel Davis, who is getting on the field right now. He's a little bit of a later round pick, but not getting a ton of targets when he's out there. So thoughts on Ayuk, Reagor, Gandy-Golden, Davis, anyone else who you think could be the next J.J.? I think
the Gandy-Golden one is particularly interesting because it's another situation where in theory he should be getting on the field because Steven Sims has been hurt. You know, Dontrell Inman's playing. Isaiah Wright kind of came out of nowhere, is playing ahead of him. They just signed Robert Foster. Like that's kind of odd that he's not getting an opportunity. And you know, it's an organization that, you know, is giving Gibson an opportunity, gave McLaurin an opportunity last year, you know, gave Logan Thomas is not the same thing. It's not a young player, but kind of like a non-traditional tight end. Like they haven't been afraid to give these guys opportunities. So the fact that they're not giving him one is a pretty big red flag for me. I'm less concerned with the other guys because my thought process with Gabriel Davis is the Bills have basically designed an offense to get him on the field with so much competition in front of him. You know, Cole Beasley's the slot guy, and you know, John Brown and Stephon Diggs are really good receivers. So I'm not too concerned with Gabriel Davis. If anything, I'm actually encouraged that he's been able to have anything at all in this offense. They've basically ridden off the tight end position and replaced it with Davis as a fourth wide receiver. So I'm still pretty high on him. And then Rager's just tough because, you know, he's been hurt. So, you know, I think I'm holding steady on Reagor. And hopefully we'll get a better idea the latter half of this year, but I wouldn't be selling Reagor while he's hurt.
Yeah, the reason I included some of these guys, like I just suggested trading for Reagor, and I also really like Ayuk, but I did include them because they are not getting targeted at a high rate, and neither is Gabriel Davis. Real quick on Davis, I agree. Actually, I've tried to basically create a list where we're including guys that maybe we feel good about, but just like do want to raise the fact that there are some red flags. So with Davis, I mean, he was out there on almost half of the dropbacks this past week with John Brown running a full slate of routes, with Stephon Diggs out there and with Cole Beasley out there, which means that they're, like you said, designing an offense running four wide so they can get this guy on the field, fourth round pick who's made a push for playing time in a way that's not all that similar to J-Jaw. He's actually getting on the field because they want him out there. So that is pretty exciting. And I actually do think he's a buy. But he isn't getting targeted at that high of a rate, which is a little bit of a red flag. On Jalen Reagor, he had a yards per route run of 1.43 before getting hurt, which isn't awesome. And outside of that one 55-yard reception, there were some miscues that an interception on a target to Reagor early on. So there's a little bit of concern with you know, how good of a wide receiver he actually is going to turn out to be. I wouldn't be trading him either. I've already suggested some ways to try to get more of him, but just do want to mention that there's a little bit of a red flag with his play in a small sample before he got hurt. And then Brandon Ayuk is maybe the guy who we would be the most concerned about with his play thus far, because he's actually run 176 routes this year, which is a fair amount of routes. We actually do have a sample on Brandon Ayuk in a way that we don't on these other three guys to the same extent. Brandon Ayuk has only earned 25 targets. He's got 165 yards for yards per route run of 0.94. So he is actually the most similar to what we saw from J-Jaw, where he's getting out there, but he's not really delivering a ton of yards per his route run.
Yeah, he's in a quadrant of some guys who have disappointed. You know, if I look at the target per route run chart that Sam Hoppen does, his last 4 weeks, you got Brandon Ayuk in a quadrant that's got Juju Smith-Schuster right next to him, you know? So that is concerning. It's also not a high pass volume offense, which adds to those concerns. Whereas, you know, Tyreek Hill is in this quadrant right now, but one, we have a longer sample. Two, it's a team that'll throw a ton. Three, it's Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill breaking efficiency. So you're not, you don't have that concern. But when you see someone like Juju and Ayuk, you do have a bit more concern here. And, you know, he did have opportunity before Debo came back. He had one really good game. And I was always high on Ayuk just because I felt like with Shanahan there, it's the type of guy they're going to scheme to get him the ball in space and take advantage of his ability for yards after the catch. But it is an interesting guy to consider selling if you're worried that, okay, Kittle's healthy now, Debo's healthy now, the value on Ayuk might only go down from here to the end of the season, which is more of a short-term value thing because I still kind of like him longer term. But if you layer in some longer-term concerns, I could see why, you know, now would be an appropriate sell window on Ayuk, or at least to test the market type scenario.
Yeah, to me, I think I'm still holding strong on Ayuk, but this is something to keep an eye on where I'm going to think about moving him into like a sell in terms of, you know, my mindset within the next like 2 to 3 weeks, potentially. The thing about Ayuk, it's interesting that you mentioned Tyreek Hill, because this past week, Ayuk's ADOT was at 14, being used deeper downfield than we would have expected. But his ADOT has bounced around a little bit over the past few weeks. It was at 5 in week 4. It was at 18.8 in week 5. So
I was just going to say those get real funky with the Niners because I think Debo had a negative ADOT last game. You know, it's do they scheme, you know, they scheme you two screen passes and, you know, all of a sudden your ADOT's totally warped.
Totally. But you now have two games in a row where Ayuk's ADOT is, you know, 18.8 and then 14. Mm-hmm. And his targets per route run over those two games have been pretty low, 13% in week 5, 13% this week. He had a yards per target of just 3 this past week, combined with not getting targeted at a high rate deep downfield. So that it's a little bit of a concern that he's not getting the targets in this deeper threat role. It's almost a concern just that he's in this role, because I don't know that this is going to be like a prolific role within the offense, but he hasn't been in this role the entire season. I guess the concern would be
correlates with Debo coming back.
Exactly. Yeah. So it is a bit of a concern if he was in the shallow Debo role and now he's in this deep threat role and he's not doing great in it. That's all concerning. But we're saying he's not doing great in it on a sample size of 2 games. And actually, in one of those games, he had a decent yards per target. He had 8.8 yards per target. So it's not even like he has been, you know, awful as a player. I think that it's just too soon to tell on Ayuk if he's not well suited to the role, if he's even going to have this deep threat role going forward. And, you know, with Tyreek Hill, you mentioned he's showing up in this bad quadrant of Sam's chart next to Ayuk. This is a highly variant type of role. This role is going to come with a ton of variance. So if he could have like a huge game here in the next couple weeks, that would make his yards per route run look awesome because he's getting deep targets. He had 29% of the air yards this past week that led all of the 49ers wide receivers. So he is getting the opportunity to make some big plays, which is nice to see. The week prior, he had 33% of the air yards, which led the team. So I do think that it's something to be aware of with Ayuk. There's now a fairly important red flag that has popped up in his profile. But at the same time, I don't think he's quite a sell.
So someone like Gandy Golden, like what would you try and get? Just like a 4th-round pick? I mean,
yeah, I'm trying to get out on Gandy Golden for whatever. I think in like shallow dynasty leagues, I play in these leagues that are like 21 roster spots and there's also kicker and defense. I think he's a drop. So yeah. In like deeper leagues, you take what you can get. That's where
my perspective skewed, because a lot of the leagues I play in are really deep where you're probably not dropping yet. So that makes sense. The next kind of group of guys we want to talk about are some guys with either funky running back usage or guys that it's just difficult to, younger guys that, you know, their roles haven't been what we wanted to see, or older guys that, at least just selfishly, I have a team with like Todd Gurley and James Conner that I'm selling off on. And I'm kind of curious your thoughts on Conner and Gurley as far as what a team selling off would do with those guys. So, but as far as the funky RB usage guys, two guys that have been used a little bit differently are Kenyon Drake and Antonio Gibson. You know, Antonio Gibson, this was a question from Eric Beinfort, who, you know, me and him have been trying to hit on Antonio Gibson as a low-owned DFS play for a couple of weeks now, and it hasn't been working. And what's confounding about Gibson is the snaps aren't good for an RB1. He's playing less than half the snaps. You still get McKissick playing third downs, and Peyton Barber was mixed in even a little bit more last week than he had been. But he's still seen 10% of the team's targets. He's still seen goal line carries. And his overall touches per snap played are pretty good. So it's a weird dynamic. Whereas the flip side of things, Kenyon Drake finally has a hugely efficient 2-touchdown game against the Cowboys last week. He's playing a lot more snaps. He's more like 68% of the snaps, whereas Gibson was 45%, but continues to not be used in the passing game. He has 8 targets on the entire season, and his goal line role, he is the goal line back, but he gets squashed a bit in value there because you've got Kyler Murray, who's kind of like the 1A goal line back. So, you know, two guys that are used in different ways and have been a little bit difficult to discern their value.
Yeah, Antonio Gibson to me, I think, looks like a buy, because if you go to the point that I made earlier of where is this player going to be drafted next year in redraft, right? So I think Antonio Gibson right now looks like a very kind of classic 4th round draft pick to me. Like, he's one of these guys who we're not entirely sure about how big the role is, but he's this young athletic guy who can catch. And it's really just a question of if he can get more of the workload, but he has the rest of this season to end up being like a guy who's going in the early to mid 2nd round of redraft leagues if he locks up a lot more of this role. I think even if they were to draft somebody in like the 3rd round or to bring in a free agent, then he'd probably go close to like where Devin Singletary was going. So kind of in the 5th round or maybe 6th round, depending on how excited people are about that other player. And then in a worst case scenario where they like bring in a guy in like the 2nd round, that's, you know, like DeAndre Swift type of thing, he'd still probably go in like the, you know, the 9th round, like we saw with Kerryon Johnson. So you just, that's kind of like the range of his potential value, I think, for a redraft. And in Dynasty, since he's the 2nd year player, has decent draft capital, he'll go at a premium to that redraft value. Unless something terrible happens. So I think he looks like a pretty safe buy, and you get some upside in terms of his production if he can just pass McKissick a bit this year.
Right. I was just going to say, you know, to get 10% of the targets and not be the 3rd down back, it gives you a pretty huge ceiling potential on your pass catching role. If they at any point cut out McKissick or reduce McKissick and Gibson starts playing more 3rd downs, more hurry up situations, you know, that 10% target share becomes one of the highest target shares in the league for any running back,
which
is immensely valuable. So there's a very quick path to him going from frustrating to stud. And it might not happen, but as you laid out, even in his current role, it's pretty good value. This question did have a little bit of, a short-term DFS slant to it, as far as, you know, I know we're mostly doing Dynasty on this show, but I am trying to think through, like, how do you deal with those guys on a week-to-week basis where they're not playing a lot of snaps, but they do have some high-value touches? I know I do the Tilt Space show with Joe Holka and Peter Overset. And Holka hates playing these guys that aren't playing a lot of snaps, but you know, he does get work. He does kind of get a diversified work volume, even though the snaps are super disappointing. So I kind of think he's still a play in DFS if his salary keeps coming down and the ownership comes down. The other thing with Gibson that hasn't really happened yet or materialized that we know is there is, you know, the home run ability. This was a guy in college who had immense home run ability. So I think if you're getting 10% of the targets, you're getting goal line carries and you have home run ability, I'm okay with you playing less than half the snaps. If you're, you know, on DraftKings, more of a 5K ish player versus, you know, a 6K plus type player.
Yeah. And Gibson, obviously this week it's the Cowboys. So you could see, you know, it's sort of a get right spot for the offense. It could be a high pace game. So I think Gibson is a guy I was on a couple weeks ago at a low salary and really burned me. Didn't play him this week. Let that bias kind of stretch out. But this week, maybe I'm back to trying to sprinkle him in. I mean, he's scary. It's kind of similar to Daryl Henderson in LA, where he's getting way closer to 50% of the snaps than you'd like. I mean, actually, in Gibson's case, he's not even getting 50% of snaps, right? He's down below that. So, but the point is, he's getting a high, like, value workload per snap. Both those guys are, but it makes you really nervous to play them. I think at least with Gibson, we should be more confident that the coaching staff views him as the most talented running back. Whereas I'm not really sure what to make of what LA is doing with their guys. They seem to maybe be a little bit more game plan specific. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they're frustrating. What one note on Drake before, you know, we do the LA guys. I feel like Drake's, if you can sell after that big game, I don't know. I'm really not into a guy that is competing with a quarterback for the goal line rush touchdowns. And he just continues to not get any of the passing down work. So you're really banking on efficiency. So I like him as a sell. I don't know if you
agree. Me too. No, I completely agree. And I think he's a sell in like every format. Like, I'm not really interested in him this week in DFS, because I think this week with the Seahawks, it's kind of sets up more as a Chase Edmonds script potentially. And then, I think he's definitely a sell in Dynasty. I mean, the guy, I've mentioned this repeatedly, but he is not signed past this season. And he's looked okay, but even in this past week, like, he had the big touchdown run after it didn't even matter. You know, they just kept feeding him to ice the game and finally broke one off.
I lost a game on that weekly game.
That's awful. That was awful. Yeah, but, you know, it's like he is highly game script dependent, and they just had the best game script ever for him. And he did deliver. That was good. But I think he's a great sell off the back of that. Actually, instead of we could talk about the LA guys, but I also want to get your thoughts on Jonathan Taylor, because he kind of falls into that Gibson type of guy too. And there's also like a kind of groundswell of this guy isn't good on Twitter. I want to get your thoughts on if you're buying any of the concerns on whether or not he can even play.
So one thing I've learned to do in fantasy is kind of synthesize information from people who know more than me. And just admittedly, I'm not going to be one that too much is going to tell you a running back can't play, especially after six games. You know, there are a lot of sharp people I trusted coming into the year had him as one of the better running back prospects we've had. It's not like he's been absolutely dreadful. He just hasn't been as good as we expected behind this offensive line. So I'm not too worried about that. A real nitpicky short-term thing is, I think a lot of people are like, oh, they cut out Wilkins these last 2 weeks. This is really good for Taylor. Well, Wilkins has been kind of hurt. So I am a little bit worried they're on bye this week. Coming after the bye, they start mixing in Wilkins again. That's a super short-term thing. That's more of like a DFS-minded thing that I have like in the back of my head.
Mike, you got to keep up with the narratives. The narrative now is that after the bye, the rookie running back smashes.
Okay. All right. All right. Narratives, the DeAndre Swift narrative. We got to keep going. But, you know, I think Taylor's the 102 or 103 if we were redrafting rookie. You and Evan and I did it, which feels like ages ago.
Yeah. What's happening? Feels like last year.
It really does. But I feel like, you know, CH and Lamb maybe go ahead of him, but he's still three. So I don't know. I don't have anything too prescient on Jonathan Taylor. I'm super pro DeAndre Swift. We hit on this in that podcast when we redrafted that there was there should be more optimism there than there probably was by the market because he had such a locked in pass down role with like no rushing work. So the fact that the rushing work could only go up and that his pass down role was already in the double digits was just a really good sign. So I'm pretty high on Swift long-term. Once we get AP completely cut out of there.
Yeah. Talk me out of Swift not being the 101 right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And Swift was the consensus 2 before the NFL draft. Do I have that correct?
Well, there was some thought that he was a lot of people thought he was the best running back in the class. Is that what you mean? Before the draft?
Well, before the draft, rookie dynasty drafts, it was JT and Swift 1 and 2.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
In some order, at least.
Yes, that's right.
So I could buy that. I guess I still think CEH tethered to Mahomes is so safe that I take CH ahead. And we've also, one of the bigger questions with Jonathan Taylor was, you know, is he going to see passing down work at all? And, you know, he's got a 94% catch rate on 17 targets and he's averaging, you know, 10 yards a catch. Those are fantastic numbers for a running back. So I'm still going to have those guys ahead, I think, but you know, Swift, like there's a clear top 5 in my opinion with Swift, Lamb, CEH, and JT. Or is that clear to and Jefferson? Jefferson. Sorry, Jefferson.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that my thoughts on JT also come down to the pass catching because I want to see so we have this guy who's highly athletic. He was highly, highly productive as a rusher in college. We have about as strong evidence as we ever get that this dude can run the ball at the NFL level. Big running back, high draft capital. It's all there. This dude can rush. Is there sometimes huge misses at the running back position, like with Trent Richardson? Yes. Sometimes people get it wrong. But Trent Richardson was traded for a first-round pick in the NFL. You know what I mean? Like there was a lot of sentiment that like, no, this guy is still awesome. You'll get a sell window on Jonathan Taylor if he ends up being a terrible rusher. You don't have to jump ship right now. You'll get an opportunity to do that later if you want to. What we've seen from Taylor in terms of receiver has been extremely promising because that was the red flag. So in my mind, this dude has taken the early part of the season to remove a red flag from his resume. Has he created like the tiniest little red flag for me in terms of his rushing efficiency? Sure. But it's like, that's the thing I feel confident on. And I'm not going to completely throw that prior out. What I am looking at is like, maybe I need to update my prior on him in terms of his receiving ability, where we weren't sure. We weren't like convinced he couldn't be a receiver. We just weren't sure. And now we're seeing him get used that way. It's really exciting. So if anything, I think Taylor should be moving up a bit in our minds in terms of his player. Now, in terms of like player profile, I am a little bit concerned with this Wilkins split, the fact that they continue to use Hines and just reminding myself of how they used Marlon Mack and kind of pigeonholed him. And I'm a little concerned about this coaching staff not being the type of coaching staff that'll ever fully commit to Taylor. You could see Taylor being the next like Joe Mixon, where we're constantly just being, or Josh Jacobs, where we're being like, can you please use this guy more? Mixon now actually getting used a lot. But for years, it was kind of like, dude, this guy is really good. He could be a fantasy stud. Please use him more. I think that Taylor could end up being in that type of role. But even in that type of role, I mean, Mixon is like probably has the consecutive, you know, the record for like most consecutive years as a second round startup pick. So I don't think you're really in that much risk holding Jonathan Taylor. I think DeAndre Swift is just extremely exciting, obviously coming off this big game, but this is like kind of the modern profile that we want. Guys who get a lot of receiving work and are very talented and can be used on the goal line. And, you know, you have Adrian Peterson potentially leaving. And what if he's not replaced? Like DeAndre Swift might end up being like the 107, 108 type of guy in redraft leagues next year. Obviously, he's going to be like a top five dynasty pick if that's the case. So I think Swift more of a buy to me than Taylor is a sell. Let's move to the LA conversation with Cam Akers, who is just one of the biggest disappointments in the entire class and someone that I think, you know, we talked about Juju and guys that, you know, we would sell Juju for. I think I'd sell Cam Akers for Juju and ride that train over what I'm dealing with Cam Akers. Where are you at on him?
I think I have a little bit more hope with Akers. It's just so tough this coaching staff somewhat infuriating with the running back usage. You know, Henderson seemed like he was dead. Now he's been great. And I just feel like this running back spot, if he could ever get a stranglehold on it, just holds so much fantasy value that I'm interested in holding to see what happens as he gets healthier. It was really weird that they said they were going to work him in more after, you know, he came back from injury, had a long run at the end of the game, said they're going to play him more next week, and then he plays one snap. Like, what do you even do with that information? It's somewhat mind-boggling, and I don't have a great response for it other than...
Well, Levitan talked about that on the solo pod, and I think what we do is that McVay's a liar. We know McVay's a liar. And so, but that obviously makes it harder to figure out what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm just at the point where they rotate backs and hot hands so much too that I don't know if I wanted to sell Akers. I think I'd still wait for, I think he's going to have a really good fantasy game at some point this year. Just because of the value of that backfield and the fact that they do ride a hot hand, unless he's just totally dead and they never give him that opportunity. But I'd be surprised that it was quite that the case. I guess we will find out though.
Yeah. And he did look really good on that long run that he had 2 weeks ago. Outside of Ronald Jones, I'm not a big team watch the tape guy, but you know, he had like, the term hip swivel, I don't think it's ever been better applied to a player, like where he just was able to like turn extremely quickly, like while on the move. It was really cool. He's got a very interesting running style where you feel like he'll probably make people miss. And would like to, you know, would be interesting if he's able to get out there. I do think that he can probably put some big runs together. But if you are kind of with Mike here that he's a hold, keep in mind that Malcolm Brown is a free agent after the year. So you could see maybe a similar trajectory to what we saw with Daryl Henderson. And in some ways, maybe if this is a concern for Akers this season, where they drafted Henderson pretty high, third round pick, and traded up for him. Then they just rode Todd Gurley into the ground, let him go, and now they're using Henderson a bit. I wonder if we could just be in a situation where they just let Akers sit for most of this year if they're happy with this rotation, but then they just let Malcolm Brown go and then they bring in Akers, and Akers has a chance to emerge as a second year player like Henderson looks like he is. The concern there though is that if Akers doesn't get on the field much this year, it's really going to hurt his value. And now you're in a position where you're holding a guy that you have to be right about. He actually has to deliver or he loses the rest of his value. And I hate to be in positions like that.
Yeah, I mean, running backs that don't have short-term value are difficult.
Yeah.
You know, to wrap your head around, because the whole premise in fantasy, a lot of what we do is around the fact that running backs are pretty fragile over the long run, you know, almost no matter who they are, with some exceptions on contract and youth. But, you know, similarly with Dobbins, it's kind of frustrating the way he's being used. But before we get into rapid fire, just real quick thoughts. Like, I'm in a league where, you know, I'm selling off Gurley. So I think Gurley is a clear sell if you're selling off.
Oh, yeah.
There's, you know, 100% no doubt. But what about someone like James Conner, who, you know, the role's great right now, the contract's up. If you were to re-sign in Pittsburgh, you could be really valuable again next year, but they've also got Benny Snell and McFarland behind him, which makes me a little concerned they won't re-sign. So I think he's a pretty easy sell for me as someone selling off, but I was wondering your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, purely hypothetically, like if you're a contending team and you could really use a running back and maybe had lost a guy like Saquon Barkley, I would be pretty willing to just trade away Barkley and get Connor. Connor, you know, if he resigns, they're just gonna have a ton of value. What do you think, Mike? I are in a league together where he has Saquon Barkley and I'm trying to sell him Connor. That's what,
yeah. So I just pigeonholed myself. All right, I'll sell Connor in my other league, buy him from you in this league. Taking my time considering these offers.
Yeah. No, I think Connor's a sell. Pains me to say it since I'm literally trying to sell him to you. But no, I think Connor's a sell. It fits with, especially if you're in a position like me. So in this league, I am just in like full on punt mode where we had this auction that we did, this slow auction, and realized about halfway into it that I wasn't going to have the depth I needed to compete in this best ball format and punted off. I have all these 2022 picks. I've talked about this league before. Well, in that type of construction, I still like to get guys that I think I can sell later. So I ended up getting Connor for an okay price.
And but in that, we're upset with that. I think you got Connor right before the auction normalized and the prices started to.
I did. Yeah, I talked with Ben Gretsch about this. We were patting ourselves on the back because we were getting guys like Connor for good prices compared to like what we thought heading into the auction, but we had failed to account for just how much money got sucked out of the room in that auction to start. And then so guys like Anthony Amico and Sean Siegel came in at the very end and just scooped value. That's it was absurd. So yeah, getting Connor ended up being a really bad move, but I got him for a price that I think was okay.
And yeah, that was a good price.
Yeah. So now I'm sitting here like I need to sell Connor because Connor is someone that unless you're competing and you can really use the production that he's going to give you right now, there is a very low floor with a guy like Connor. There's also a high ceiling. They could re-sign him. It could work out great. But when you're rebuilding and you're getting a guy who's actually producing and making the potential for your draft pick to be worse, then, you know, you want to move a guy like that off your team anyway. And if there's the potential for the bottom to fall out, then I think you should be really motivated to move a guy like Connor. And I would be careful if you're buying Connor to make sure, you know, that you're actually competing, that you're actually going to be using this production because that floor is also low, and get him at a price where you can, you know, if he is re-signed, which I don't think looks particularly likely, that ends up being kind of gravy. So I've completely just ruined my trade pitch to you. And I don't know why you put Connor on this list. How am I supposed to sell him to you?
I needed honesty from you, Pat. I needed honesty from you. So I'm wondering if we should do rapid fire next week, just because I don't trust us to actually rapid fire these questions.
I agree. I think we probably... There is one on here that's like sells versus buys versus holds, and we'll get to that next week. But that was making me thinking on the Cam Akers discussion. I do think that like with a guy like Cam Akers, he can be both like a sell and a buy because the market this time of year might be all over the map on a guy like Cam Akers. So if you feel like you can move off Cam Akers for a good price that, you know, you're like, I don't want to ride this roller coaster for the next year. I don't feel that strongly about Cam Akers as a prospect. I drafted him mostly because of the opportunity, and now I'm not sure if that opportunity is there. If you feel that way, I think he could be a sell. You're probably still getting something pretty good for Cam Akers. I mean, if I could go over from Cam Akers and get Rager, I'd 100% do that. So he could be a guy to shop around. I think he is a guy to shop around right now and see what the market looks like. But also, if someone's just like panicking on Cam Akers and giving him away, or, you know, I would definitely be making offers for Cam Akers too. So some of these guys, I think, are both buys and sells because the market isn't sure what to make of them.
Yeah, I think that's a good, I think the point is, you know, really test the waters on some of these guys that are young enough to still have hype, but have disappointed, because you could buy in one league and sell in another, even depending on the price point.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, we can call it there and get a little bit more into this rapid fire stuff next week. Since we'll probably spend 10 minutes on each rapid fire topic, but yeah, check out all of our content at Establish Your Run. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @2hats1Mike. I'm on Twitter @PatCorain. Please rate and review the podcast if you like what you're hearing, and we'll see you next week.